Okay, page 390, we're going to start Pasuk Dalet. We'll start there, even though I think we learned the Pasuk already. Story is after the month fell. Okay, that was, we finished. Then the Jews came to Midbar Sin, to the desert of Sin. Now, at Sin, they had no more water. They ran out of water, and they started complaining to Moshe Rabbeinu, where's the water? Why, you know, we need water to drink. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, why are you fighting with me? Why are you testing God? It's not good. It's not good what you're doing. And the Jews started screaming, why did you take us out of Egypt to die with thirst? It's the worst type of, you know, hunger. The worst type of suffering is thirst. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, what should I do? They're going to stone me in a minute, you know, if I don't give them water. So in Pasuk, that's in Pasuk Dalet. Yitzchak Moshe Hashem Leimer, Moshe Rabbeinu cried out to Hashem saying, what can I do for this nation? Aid Maskoluni a little bit more, they're going to stone me. So Hashem said to Moshe, basically, as the Mefarshim explained, Hashem said to Moshe, why are you speaking Lashon Hara against the Jews? You're saying they're going to stone you. I want you to do something. I want you to walk in front of the people. I want you to see if they're going to stone you. And as Hashem says, that's why Hashem said, go before the people. Because Hashem said to him, you're saying to me, you're speaking Lashon Hara against my kids, Hashem said. You're telling me they're going to stone you. Go before the nation. And take from you the elders of the Jewish people, that they should testify to what's going to happen. And the stick that you hit the Nile with, take on your hand, and go. Now, why did Hashem emphasize over here to take the stone? Because the Jews were saying that this stick was only bad. It did all the plagues, it made the water into blood. We did this, but I'm just to get further. Okay, this is where we're up to. God says, I am going to be standing next to you in this place, next to the rock. Now Chorev, by the way, is Har Sinai. So the Medrash says this rock was on Har Sinai, and Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock in Har Sinai, and the water went all the way to where the Jews were, with tons of water. It says in the Medrash that the Jews were holding a pitcher of water, an empty pitcher in the hand. It became full from the water. It was like a tsunami, but a good one. It was water pouring all over the place. Now, the problem over here is, in the sequence of the Psukim, soon we're going to learn that the Jews were in Rephidim. Chorev from Rephidim is far. Okay? Relatively speaking, it was far. So that's why Hashem told Moshe, the Ramban explains, why did Hashem told Moshe to take the elders, that they should testify that this miracle is going to be taking place. Because the Jews are not going to Chorev to see Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock. He had to take only the elders that they should be able to testify, you know, and it flowed all the way down to 390 to refeed them. Chorev is the name of the city. Now, the Yalkut Shemeni says a very beautiful lesson from this. He says, wherever there's a mark of human feet, there I am before you. God said, what does he say over here? Hini eimed lefanecha shem al atzur. Okay? Where was this rock? In a wilderness. And it was a rock. You know, not an inanimate object, domem. It wasn't even a movable object. And yet, Hashem says, a Jew has the ability to spiritually elevate even a rock in a desert. Because Hashem says, why? Because Hinani Eimed Lefanecha Sham. Wherever you are, God says, I am standing with you. You know, there's a famous story about the guy walking in the sand, and he saw two footprints, and then he saw one, and he came to God and said, what's going on? God said, what do you want? I carried you. You know, Hashem says, basically, that I'm carrying every Jew. I'm standing before you. V'kisa v'atzur. What? Yeah, it's a famous story. V'kisa v'atzur, and Hashem said you should hit the rock. And the Torah, and Rashi comments in the Medrash, it doesn't say hit on the rock. Hika batur means hit in the rock. That means Moshe Rabbeinu, like Rashi says, was such a strong, it was called some Purim material, it was such a strong stick, it was able like to crack the rock and get into the rock. Because he said hit in the rock. V'yotzu mimenu mayim, and water will come out of it. V'shasa ha'am, and the people will drink. So the people will have what to drink. And it says in the Medrash, there was so much water. Like we said, a guy was holding a jug. They didn't even have to go anywhere. The water just came to them in an abundance. V'yaske Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu did it, le'enei ziknei Yisrael, in the eyes of the elders of the people. So they testified that this is really what took place. V'yikra Hashem ha'makim, so they called, he called, meaning either Moshe Rabbeinu or Hashem, it doesn't say who called, but they called the place Masa u'meriva, test and contention. Why? Ariv b'nei Yisrael, because of the fighting of the b'nei Yisrael, v'naseisim es Hashem lema, and they tested God, and they contended God by saying, Hayesh Hashem b'kibayinu ayin, is God between us or not? Now, what does this mean? So Mefarshim explained, Moshe Rabbeinu called the place Masa u'meriva, to remind the Jewish people that that's not the way you work with God. If you want your needs from Him, don't complain. Ask for it, Hashem says, and I'll give it. Masa Meriva means fighting and contending and going against God. Hashem says, I want you to remember that by calling the place this, that that's not the way you get it. You don't nudge, you don't complain. You know, parents tell the kids also, you want something, ask for it. Don't complain. And that's what Hashem said to the Jewish people. Don't complain, just ask for the commandment, and you'll get it. Okay, now starts the end of the parsha, but this is the very famous story of Amalek. And obviously there's a lot to talk about, just about the concept of Amalek and what the whole story of Amalek means to us. Vayavei Amalek, Amalek came, vayilochem em Yisrael befidim, they started fighting with the Jews in the city of Refidim. Now there's the famous Medrash that says that, they give an analogy, there was a boiling hot bath, a boiling hot mikveh. Everybody was afraid to jump in, they were going to get burnt. Came one crazy meshugana lunatic, he jumped into the bath, he got burnt, but he automatically, psychologically, cooled it off for everybody else. Because once they say he did it, you know, it's possible to do. The same thing the Medrash says, that when the Jews were leaving Egypt, they were boiling hot. They just came miracles after miracles and destruction of Egypt and Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Mon and now the water. Everybody was afraid to start up with the Jews. Came one crazy Amalek, started up with the Jews. Why did he start up with the Jews? Because Bilam, the Medrash says, Bilam advised Amalek. They said, listen, you're a descendant of Avram Avinu. Because Amalek was the grandson of Esav, the original Amalek. You know, the Esav had a grandson called Amalek. And from him came the nation of Amalek. So when they were afraid, you know, we wanted to start up with the Jews, so Bilam said to Amalek, you're the only one that could do it because you are descendants of Abraham, so to speak, so he might save you. You're the only one that could start up with your cousins because you're all in the family, so to speak. They were cousins with the Jews. That's the simple Medrash. Then Rashi says another Medrash. Hashem says to the Jewish people, I'm going to teach you a lesson. And he gives an analogy, Rashi, that Hashem takes care of all the needs. So he gives an analogy, a father was taking care of his son. He was holding the son. And like Rashi says, the son saw something, he says, Abba, give it to me, gave it to him. Another thing, and another thing, whatever the son wanted, the father gave him. And the father's holding the kid. Finally, the kid sees a friend, and he says, while he's on his father's shoulders, he says to the friend, by the way, did you see my father anywhere? So the father says, what? This is the way I'm taking care of you. Then you say, where's your father? So the father put the kid down, and a dog came and bit him. That's the analogy. The same thing over here. Hashem is saying, I took care of you to some time. I took care of Kriyas Yamsav. I gave you the money. I gave you the... And then you come along and say, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu in Mayan, in the last pasuk of Zion. Is there God amongst us or not? So God said, you know what? I'm going to put you down. And the dog came and bit them. Amalek started up with the Jewish people.
Well, I appreciate it.
Right. Typical Jewish trait. Yeah, they unappreciative. Now, therefore, this is the Amalek that started fighting with the Jews in the city of Rephidim. Now,
I wish I would on help.
Next time, bring a note from your kids.
Next time, what?
Get a note from your kids when you're late.
Well, these are all Jewish sports hall of famers. All famous Jews.
390. 390.
Sorry to
interrupt. Okay, yeah. So make a habit out of it. So now it's.
Did you just tell them that?
It says Rephidim. So the Medrash says, why was the place mentioned as Rephidim? You know, every name in Chumash is not a regular name. It has a significance. Especially if the Torah says Amalek came to fight the Jews in Rephidim, there is a concept of Rephidim. So Rashi says in the Medrash, what is Rephidim? Rephidim was a place where Rafu Yudehem, they became weak in Torah study. They became weak in Torah study. So because they became weak in Torah study and observance of mitzvahs, that allowed Amalek to come fight. So the explanation is very simple. Yitzchak blessed Yaakov and Esav, if you remember. And he said, Hakol kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands are the hands of Esav. So the Medrash says in that pasuk that when there's the voice of Yaakov studying Torah, then there's no hands of Esav. When there's no study of Torah from Yaakov, then the hands of Esav get strong. And like we said, Esav, Amalek is a descendant of Esav. So as long as the Jewish people are studying Torah and learning and doing what they have to do, Amalek can't come. Once the Jews start weakening, they're in Rephidim, they're in the city of weakening, so then all of a sudden Amalek is able to come and fight with the Jews.
What was the purpose of Amalek attacking the Jews? What did they have to do with him?
Amalek started up with the Jews. Why did they come now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was going to say this now. Taisus over here asks the question in the Chumash. Why did Amalek wait to come until now? They should have come earlier at least. What are they waiting now? So he says as follows. In fact, he strengthens the question. Amalek always hated the Jews. When the Jews came down to Egypt, they had only 70 people.
Right.
If Amalek wants to destroy the Jewish people, it would have made much more sense to do it then, rather than now when they have 3 million people.
Yes.
Okay. So he says as follows. Hashem promised Avram Avinu, the Jews are going to be slaves. After Avram died, it went to Yitzchak. When Yitzchak went, it went to Yaakov and Banav. Okay? Now, it says, if I'm going to destroy the Jews then, before they come into Egypt, then I'm going to be slaves to Egypt, because we're also descendants of Avram. Mm. Meaning, God said, Avram, your descendants are going to go into exile. So now Avram died, so it became Yitzchak's kids. Yitzchak died, it became Yaakov's kids. So Amalek said, if I destroy the Jewish people before they go down to Egypt, so I'm going to be ending being slaves. Because we're the next closest relative, so to speak. So we're not going to start up. We're going to wait until they went to Mitzrayim. They paid up the debt of being slaves. Now we can go and destroy Amalek.
Destroy the Jews.
Before we even go further into the Psukim, in Bilam's, you know, when Bilam came to curse the Jews and it ended up to be Brachis. So over there it says in the Pasuk, Reish is Goyim Amalek. Amalek is the head of all nations. What does it mean, Reish is Goyim Amalek? You find a certain uniqueness of Amalek that was worse than all the other nations. There was a nation Mitzrayim. God never said, erase the name of Amalek, of Mitzrayim. There were the seven nations of Canaan that obviously the Jews had to fight. Hashem nowhere in Chumash said, Mochot Timcha, erase the memory of Canaan. The only nation that God commanded to erase the name is Amalek. What is this uniqueness of Amalek that's even worse than the seven nations of Canaan? And it's even worse than Mitzrayim. So in Chassidus, it brings down an expression in Zohar, I believe, that says, what was the uniqueness of Amalek? Reishis goyim Amalek. Amalek was unique because Yodeya es Ribonai. Amalek understood the greatness of God. Umechaven limribay and intended to rebel against him. In other words, if somebody doesn't know Torah and rebels against it, it's not as bad as somebody that knows and rebels. Because the guy doesn't know, they don't know. You don't know the greatness of God and you don't listen to God, it's not as bad as a guy that knows the greatness of God and rebels. The seven nations of Canaan, Chassidus explains, corresponded with the seven emotional attributes. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, the emotional attributes. Amalek was unique. It had an understanding of God. And to have an understanding of God and to rebel against him, that's even worse.
Is that the same guy who knew when, exactly what time of the day Hashem...
That was Bilaam. But do you want to know something?
He was greater in more prophecy than...
The emotional...
You want a piece of paper?
Yeah, just give me a clean sheet of paper. But I'll show you something very interesting. It's brought down in Svarim, and this I wanted to say, but you gotta see it. I don't know how many of you can see it, but if you write Bilaam on top, and Amalek at the bottom, right?
Each have four letters.
Each have four letters. But then, if you cut it this way, and you read it, two on top and two at the bottom, you get Bilaam. And if you read these two and this two, you get Amalek.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So it's brought down in Svarim. Wow. You have Bilaam this way, Amalek this way, and if you cut it in half, you have Bilaam this way and Amalek this way. You see what I'm saying? I mean, if you draw a piece of paper, you see it very simply. So... It shows. Yeah, because it shows the real strong connection between Bilaam and Amalek. Because Bilaam, as the Pasuk itself says, Yodeya Das Elyon, Bilaam also knew, like you said, when God got angry and he was in prophecy greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, Bilaam, the Pasuk says, Yodeya Das Elyon, he has an understanding of God, and he rebelled against him. The same exact concept is Amalek. Amalek is somebody that understands God and yet goes to rebel against God. So therefore, Bilaam already said what is the uniqueness of Amalek, and that's why the Pasuk says, Reishis Goyim Amalek. Reishis, the beginning of Chochmah, said Reishis. One of the Targum say B'chochmasa. Reishis is beginning, which refers to the level of Chochmah. Because Chochmah is the first of God's attributes. Reish is going Amalek because Amalek had an understanding of God. And therefore, the concept of an Amalek is not only something that existed, thousands of years ago. This is the internal struggle and the eternal struggle of the internal struggle between the Jew and the evil. The Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Tov. And therefore, when we go on, we're going to see more so... Haman was a descendant of Amalek. Haman is a descendant of Amalek. That's why all these troublemakers, so to speak, were all... right.
Rabbi.
It was the worst than everything else. Yeah.
Let me go back to a statement you made, and it's still amazing to me. You said there were 70 Jews when Amalek first took over.
No. No, when the Jews went down to Egypt, they had 70.
Yeah, and then, what did you say, 2-3 million?
When they left Egypt.
But Amalek still alive?
Not the same guy, the nation.
Oh, I know that.
Well, the,
but you didn't say that.
I did, Amalek, the nation.
Is Bilaam also descendant of Esau?
Bilaam, no. Bilaam was a descendant of Lavan. In fact, in one opinion, the Medrash says Bilaam was Lavan. Another opinion says he was his grandson.
But he followed in the ways of
Lavan. But in that level, He had an understanding of God. Okay.
Amalek a person or a nation?
Amalek was a person who later became a nation. All the nations were called Canaan was because there was a guy Canaan.
King Amalek.
Bnei Yisrael are called because Yaakov was Yisrael. We're called Bnei Yisrael. Okay, so we'll see more details as we get in. But the Amalek came and started fighting with the Jews. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yehoshua, "Bechar lanu anoshim, choose for us people." Now it's very interesting. Rashi says, he said, "Choose for us people." Moshe Rabbeinu is the Rebbe, Yeshua is the student, and he says, like he makes himself equal with Moshe Rabbeinu, with Yeshua. He says, "Choose for us people." So Rashi says, this is what it says in Pirkei Avos, that you should respect your student like you respect yourself. In the Medrash it says, at this point of time, Yeshua was 57 years old when this story took place. It doesn't say, Mamla is brings down that Yeshua at this time was Ben Nun Zayin Shani, was 57 years old. He says, choose for us people, meaning levels of people of great stature. That means they're equal to Mesha and Yeshua, meaning the level of great tzaddikim. Vitzei and go out. Hilochem ba'amalek, go fight Amalek. Now, go out where? You should say, go fight Amalek. What do you mean say? Go out from where? So Rashi says, from the Medrash, he had to go out of the clouds. The clouds surrounded the Jews in the desert. When the Jews traveled in the desert, they were completely surrounded. Nobody was able to see them. There were clouds in all directions surrounding them, on top of them and under them. So in order to go fight, he had to go out of the bubble. He had to say, go out of the cloud and go fight against Amalek.
That Hashem's intent when he put all those clouds, was that God's intent? Intentionally?
Yeah.
To protect them.
Right. To protect the Jews, that they should be protected from all the nations. Okay, Machar tomorrow, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Anechi nitzav aresha giva, I am going to be standing on top of the hill, Umati alekim biyadi, and the staff of God will be in my hand. Now, Rashi says as follows: what does it mean? Bechar lanu anoshim. They had to be strong to fight Amalek, because Amalek was a very powerful country. They had to be God-fearing people because they needed merits, and also Rashi says they had to know how to undo witchcraft. Amalek were witchcrafters. And when you fight with witchcraft, it's very difficult to fight them. So therefore, they had to be people that knew how to undo Kishif. And how to undo Kishif, they would be able to get the war. What? This is very interesting. The Rambam writes the whole thing is shtusim, and it's not real, and... Yeah, but Lebel, you find in Chumash, I mean, the concept of witchcraft. Basically, they say that some eastern places, you know, in India, one of those places, they still know it. Okay, so now the question is, why did Moshe, for that matter, tell Yehoshua to do this battle? Why didn't he tell Aaron to do it? Why didn't he tell somebody else to do it? Why did he pick Yehoshua to fight the battle? So number one, there's a number of issues over here. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yehoshua, you are a descendant of Yosef. Yeshua was from Ephraim. If Yeshua came from Yosef, Yosef was the cause of the Jews ending up in Egypt. Like you said, now that's why Amalek waited. So now go fight the enemy. Because if the Jews would have stayed in Canaan and never gone down to Egypt, they wouldn't have this battle of Amalek. So to speak, Yeshua, it's his fault. I mean, Yosef's fault that the Jews ended up fighting with Amalek. Another reason is because it was already given over in Kabbalah, so to speak, that they're going to fall into the hands of the children of Yosef. Amalek has to fall in the hands of Yosef. I mean, in the children of Rachel. And that's why, by the way, you know, where was Mordechai and Esther from? No. Which Shevet? Binyamin. Binyamin was also Rachel's child. So, who did Haman fall in the hand to? Ishimini, the man of Binyamin. And therefore, this Mechama started. In fact, even Shaul HaMelech was also from that tribe. It's the same tribe as Mordechai and Esther. So that's why Yeshua was commanded to fight Amalek now. Later on in Tanakh, Shaul was told by Shmuel and Hashem, go fight Amalek, and he didn't finish the job. And then Mordechai and Esther had to finish the job. These are all descendants of Rachel. Okay? Another reason is because Yeshua was non-stop connected to Moshe. He was a student that never left the tent, meaning he was always learning. Amalek came because the Jews were weak in learning. So if Yeshua, who was the super learner, so therefore he was able to conquer Amalek, and a bunch of other reasons that they say. Okay, so Moshe says, tomorrow I'm going up on the mountain, on the hill, and the stick of God is in my hand. Vayas Yeshua kasha amalei Moshe. Yeshua did what Moshe Rabbeinu told him to do. He gathered the people, he went to fight Amalek. Now, who was Chur? Chur, everything's in the family. Chur was Moshe's nephew. He was Miriam's daughter.
He was Miriam's daughter?
Son. Oh, you were listening. Good. I want to see if you listen.
There's something Kabbalistic in it. He was Miriam's daughter.
Did you see that, Lolita?
Very good, honey.
Listen.
See that Moshe Pippin?
You took your vitamins.
Why would I come here?
Okay.
If I don't want to listen to you.
There's a lollipop back there.
Miriam, Moshe Rabbeinu's sister Miriam, married the famous Kalev ben Yefune. This other spy with Yeshua that came back good. Kalev ben Yefune married Miriam. And in fact, the Gemara in Seder discusses at great length that Miriam, at this time in history, was sickly, ill, and ugly. She was very sickly. And Kalev married, eventually God made her heal, and she ended up becoming beautiful. But when Kalev married Miriam, he married her what was called the Shem Shemayim, because the Gemara says, like it says earlier in Chumash, that Aaron married Elisheva Achais Nachshon. Aaron HaKohen married Elisheva, the sister of Nachshon. So Rashi comments in the Gemara, from the Medrash, why does it say, who cares who the brother is? Because when you marry a woman, you should check into the girl's brothers. Because a lot of the boys end up to be like the mother's brothers.
What about the woman herself?
Now, so Kalev,
I don't think so.
Kalev, knew that Miriam, who are her brothers, Moshe and Aaron, you can't get better at stuff than that. So Kalev married Miriam. They have the son Chur, who was a very great tzaddik. Eventually, the Jews killed Chur by the eagle, because Chur tried to stop them from worshipping the golden calf, and the Jews killed him. So Moshe, Aaron, and Chur went up on the mountain. So it says, why did three people go up on the mountain? From here you learn that a fast needs three people to go in front of the Amid. Like you have the Chazan, in the time of fast days, in the Mishnah, when they used to daven for rain and all that. So you had the Chazan, and you had two people on your side. One on each side. Like when you read the Torah, you have the guy that reads, and then a guy on each side. So because they were fasting, and Chazal say they were fasting, Moshe and Aaron, when the Jews were fighting Amalek, so therefore, they wanted three people to make like a bezdin of people fasting to daven for the Jews to win the battle. So Moshe, Aaron, and Chur went up to the.
If God told them to fight Amalek, it means it wasn't like given that they would win. It's not given that they would win Amalek.
If what?
If God's telling them go out and fight Amalek.
Right. So no, but it had to be special people to go fight.
Okay, the people were fighting, but it's not he's giving them, like, I'm giving you Amalek to fight and win the war. They still had.
Yeah, but you see what it was soon. Moshe Rabbeinu's hands called the shots.
Yeah, I remember. That's what my question is. If God's telling them, go and fight it, means you're going to win it. So why do they still
have to... Yeah, wouldn't he be with us? Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but we'll see why it was up to Moshe Rabbeinu picking up his hands or not. Let's finish the story. And the pasuk continues and says, "V'ha'yan it was kasha yadim Moshe yadai when Moshe Rabbeinu picked his hands up, v'gavah Yisrael the Jews were winning. V'chasha yaniach yadai when he put down his hands, gavah Amalek then Amalek won." So it's like depending on what Moshe Rabbeinu doing with his hands. So the famous Rashi that's really from the Gemara, and it's even a song, "V'chiyadav shal Moshe Eisus Melchama." What do you think? Moshe Rabbeinu picked up his hand, they won, and he put down his hands, they lost. What does it mean? So the Gemara says, "Hayu bizman shahayu Yisrael mistaklin klapi mailam." When Moshe Rabbeinu picked up his hands, and as the Medrash says, all the Jews around that didn't go to battle were watching Moshe Rabbeinu's hands. And they understood when Moshe Rabbeinu picked up his hands to daven, they davened more. So when the Jews looked up to God, so that's meaning Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were up, so then they won the war. At the time the Jews were not so good, they were losing the war. And therefore this is, like he says, to give an example, he quotes the famous Gemara, the Chanina ben Daisa, the famous Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, the miracle worker. He had a thing when people came to him with the name of a sick person, he would say right away if he's going to live or die. He took the paper, he davened for them, and then he came back and right away said if his guy's going to live or die. So they asked Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, how do you do that? How do you know? So he said, if when I daven, the davening goes fluently, you know, it goes properly, I know the guy's going to live. If he does, if I doesn't go, you know, I stutter, it doesn't go, I know the guy's going to die. And the same thing it says, when the Jews were looking up to Moshe Rabbeinu and following in the ways of Hashem, so then the Jews won. And if not, the Jews lost. So basically, you know, like he says, the Medrash, why did Moshe put down his hands? Just keep it up the whole time. He said the hands were down, forced down by the Jews' behavior. That's what it means. Not a physical up and down, you know. But the Jews behaved, Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were up. The Jews didn't behave, their hands were forced down.
It was so heavy, no?
What?
But it was getting heavy for him.
That's the next pasuk. We'll see that.
At this time they're fighting Amalek?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Behave like, they were doing war. What do they have to behave?
Not the soldiers, the people, the Jews. To behave and do tshuva. Right.
Why the soldiers are fighting?
Right. In fact, this is the source. This is one of the sources. This is one of the sources.
John.
This is one of the sources in Halacha that says that when the Jewish people went to fight, all the people that stayed home had to fast. And that's why, even in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it says that, you know, we have Tainus Esther, the day before Purim we fast, Tainus Esther, Esther Tonus, whatever. It says, why do you fast then? There's no mention of it anywhere in scriptures. The fast that Esther told them to fast 3 days was Pesach time. It was nothing to do with Purim. So the Rambam writes, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch writes, that when the Jews went to war, as we learn out from this pasuk, the Jews that remained at home fasted. Like Moshe Aaron and Achor fasted, the Jews fasted. And therefore, when the Jews fought in the day of Purim, on the 13th is when they fought, because they rested on the 14th Purim, so on the 13th, when the Jews were fighting, the Jews that remained at home had to fast. And that's interesting. The Rebbe explains, why is it called Tainus Esther? It's not even called Tainus Esther Mordechai. It's not even called Tainus Esther Yehudim. It's called only Tainus Esther. So the Rebbe explains very simply. Haman's decree was on every single Jew. Men, women, and children. The din is, soldiers are not allowed to fast. They have to be strong. So if the war decree of Haman was against every single Jew, every Jew had to fight for themselves. The only Jew that was safe, that didn't have to fight, was Esther. She was safe in the palace. So the only Jew that fasted was Esther. So it's called Tainus Esther. Because she was the only Jew that didn't have to defend herself. But the source of it, in Halacha is because when people went to war, the Jews that stayed home had an obligation to fast. Yeah?
Rabbi, the rabbi just made me think of what happened 60 years ago.
Here goes.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, it's amazing. We're talking about the Jews who, you know, wanted to fast. They didn't want to fight. We were on Hawaii. We were going to
Marty, now we're by Amalek. One second.
Wait a minute, let me say it.
You say 9 minutes. O'clock. No, it's too late.
Give me 2 minutes.
Later.
I want to tell you how Jews...
At 9 o'clock, I'll listen to you.
We got to fast. We don't want to go with the combat.
Okay, good.
So we went into Kwajalein in the Marshall Islands. I don't know what those Jews, what happened to them? Did they fast or did they fight?
They did both. Now, the Ramban learns... Besides this thing that, you know, like the Jews not behaving, forced Moshe Rabbeinu's hands down or whatever. The Ramban said, what does it mean over here? Simply, Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were up, but it was good. And Moshe Rabbeinu saw, when he had the koyach to keep his hands up, the Jews won. We had no more koyach, had no more strength, and his hands were physically. So then he saw that the Jews were losing. So then Aaron Nechun, the next pasuk, caused Moshe Rabbeinu's hands to go up. Meaning they made it, okay. Videi Meshi Kvedim, Meshi Rabbeinu's hands became heavy, and as we explained, in the spiritual sense of it, because the Ebenezer says, you can't put up your hand all day. Let's see a person hold his hands up a whole day. But that's not the question. The question is, Meshi Rabbeinu, so to speak, the Jews were the problem Jews over here. They kept complaining. They didn't behave properly. So Meshi Rabbeinu's hands became very heavy. In a spiritual sense. So what happens? Vayikhu Evan, they took a stone. Aaron and Hur took a stone. Vayasimu Tachtov, and they put it underneath Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayeshiv Ela, and he sat on the stone. So the Medrash says, why? Aaron and Hur tamchu biyadav. And Aaron and Hur were holding Moshe Rabbeinu's hands up. Mizeachod and Mizeachod, one on each side. That means that Aaron was holding two of Aaron's hands were holding one of Moshe Rabbeinu's hands to make sure it stayed up, and Hur was holding the other hand to make sure it stayed up. So it says in the Medrash, so therefore they needed Moshe Rabbeinu to sit down. Moshe Rabbeinu was extremely tall. This is in Pshat. Moshe Rabbeinu was 15 feet tall. He was 10... He did, for the Bulls. He was 10 amos high, the Gemara said. Okay? 10 amos is 15 feet. Now, Aaron and Hur were average height. So, they can't. How in the world can they hold up Moshe Rabbeinu's hand? So they got Moshe Rabbeinu to sit. And if he sat, so then they're able to hold his hands up. That's the simple meaning of it, the way the Medrash, so to speak, and the Mefarshim interpret it. Until night. Until night, the whole day. The Medrash says even more, that they needed more time. Moshe Rabbeinu stopped the sun. He gave him more daylight. We'll see that in a minute. Now, the Rashi quotes also from the Medrash that where did Moshe Rabbeinu sit? On a stone. He didn't sit on cushions. He didn't sit on the pillows. Why? Moshe Rabbeinu said, the Jews are suffering, so am I. He had to sit, but it had to be on a stone, which is not comfortable. As like pillows or other things like that. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, because the same thing we find earlier in Chumash, when Hashem revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu on the burning bush. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu reveal himself to the burning bush? So Rashi quotes before in Shmos in the Medrash, when God says, it's a thorn bush. not a beautiful fruit tree, not a luscious garden, in a thorn bush. God said the Jews are suffering in Galus. I will also be in a thorn bush. I will also feel the pain with them. Moshe Rabbeinu felt the Jewish pain. So the pasuk Vayi Yodav Emuna Abay Hashemesh, and his hands remained Emun in faithful prayer Abay Hashemesh until the coming of the sun. Now says Rashi says, remember we said before Amalek was Kishif, witchcraft. Witchcraft knows which hours of the day are more lucky. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He stopped the sun, and the whole system got mixed up. He stopped the sun, so the whole system mixed the famished. So he couldn't even practice the witchcraft on the Jewish people. Right. Now, the Balaturim says, when it says here in the Pasuk, his hands were emuna, faithful in prayer, Abay Hashemesh until the sunset. So the Baal Turim says the Moshe Rabbeinu mentioned over here Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Emuna, it says by Avram Avinu veheemin b'Hashem. Avram Avinu believed in God. The pasuk says, "Bay is Yitzchak." It says Yitzchak ba mi bay. Yitzchak was coming, and Shemesh is Yaakov because it says he went to sleep. And Vayeti Kivah Hashemesh, because the sun came. So we find the word Amunah by Avram, we find the word Bay by Yitzchak, and we find the word Shemesh by Yaakov. So it says in the Baal Turim says that Moshe Rabbeinu was davening that they should have the merit of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to help them. Vayachlish Yeshua Samalek, Yeshua weakened the nation of Amalek Vesame Lefichorev by a sword. And it said, what did he do? And he did a very strange thing, the Medrash says. Yeshua chopped off the heads of the strong ones, and he didn't kill the weak ones. Why? Because God said so. That's it. Al pi Ashrina, it was what Hashem said. That was the only way he did it. Because otherwise, he should have killed everybody. If you can kill the strong ones, for sure you can kill the weak ones. The pasuk says, "Vayachlish," he weakened them. How do you weaken a nation? By killing the strong ones, but he didn't kill them all. As of now, there was no mitzvah to destroy Amalek. And that's why Yeshua understood that this is Mechames Hashem, like it says in pasuk Tazayin later. Melchama LaHashem BaMalek, it was a battle of God. The whole war didn't make sense. He did it, Mamash Hashem said, kill the strong ones, not the weak ones. It doesn't make sense. You might as well kill them all. This is what Hashem said.
When you're in the war, how do you know which one is strong, which one is weak?
The generals, they beat strong guys.
When Hashem say to somebody, go and lashkit kol Amalek, apilu et ha'am.
That was when God said, Shmuel told it to Shaul. Mm-hmm. In the book of Shmuel. When Shaul didn't listen, Hashem took away the melucha from him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That was the only time that Hashem commanded to destroy them completely.
What is it? It's a symbol here, to weaken, not to destroy them, to destroy them. It's like, well,
there's a process.
It's like a virus.
There's a process. It had to be weaken the Yetzirah, then kill the Yetzirah. I mean, there's a lot. We didn't even start talking about Amalek yet. The concept of this whole battle of Amalek had to be done, and this is the last, before we said, what's so bad about Amalek? Rashi is going, Amalek, you know, the first of all the nations, they started up with the Jews. But Amalek has a certain uniqueness to it. Not in this parsha, but in Parsha's Kiseis, when the Torah says, well, read in Parsha Zohar. You know, remember what Amalek did? It says, what did Amalek did? Asher korcha baderech. Simply means they met you in the way. Korcha also comes to the word kar, coldness. What is an Amalek? In a spiritual sense, what is Amalek? Amalek throws coldness into Yiddishkeit. you know, Yiddish kind of person can be excited and, no, a person can be compassionate and vibrant and excited and enthusiastic about Yiddishkeit. Comes Amalek doesn't say, don't do it. Amalek says, cool it. Amalek is the same numerical value as the word Safek. Amalek, Ayin, Mem, Lamed, Kuf. Ayin and Lamed is 100, and Kuf is another 100, and Mem is 40. Amalek equals 240. The word Safek, Samach, Pei, Kuf, is also 60, 80, and 100. It's 240. What is this terrible evil of Amalek? Amalek comes and doesn't say, don't keep mitzvahs, don't do this. But Amalek comes to the Jew and does something even worse. Amalek comes to the Jew and casts doubts. Mm-hmm. Doubts are worse than not keeping. There's a story later on, we read it in the Haftarah Parshas Ki Sisa, the famous story when Eliyahu came on Har HaCarmel. It was in the days of the bad kings over there. And there are 400 prophets, Jewish prophets of the idols, Nevi Yabal. And Eliyahu was the only Jew loyal to God. And he comes to the Jewish people and he says to them, we read in the Haftarah, Ad Masa Atam Peschem Ashtei Asi'ifim. He says to the Jews, why are you dancing at all the weddings, so to speak? Why are you standing in the threshold? He says, Im Hashem Luchu Acharav. If God is real, go to God. And if it's the idol, the Baal, go after the Baal. So the Rebbe asks, what type of statement is that? You tell a Jew, listen, pick God or idol, but don't be in the middle. You know, don't be not knowing where you are. So you see from there, though, clearly, that being wishy-washy, not knowing, is this right or is that right, you're worse than going to the Baal. The worst thing is doubts. There's an expression in Chazal, Ein Simcha Kataras Asfekes. There's no greater joy than when your doubts are solved. The worst thing that can mess up a person bad is doubts. Doubts is the worst thing. What does Amalek do? Amalek doesn't come and say, don't do it. That wouldn't be so bad. Amalek comes and casts a doubt. Maybe it's right, maybe it's not right. There's a din. There's certain sins. If you bring a sin offering, it's called carbon asham. The guy knows he ate treif, he has to bring a certain carbon. What happens, there's what's called asham talui, a hanging asham. What does it mean? The guy doesn't know if he ate treif. There are two pieces of meat, let's say one was good, one was kosher, one was treif. He ate one, he didn't know which one he ate. Maybe he ate the treif, maybe he ate the kosher. So you have to bring what's called a hanging sin offering. Basically, because if you didn't sin, you can't bring a sin offering. So it's like a hanging one. If I sinned, it's a sin offering. If I didn't sin, it's something else. So the Gemara says, the Ashim Tolui, that doubtful carbon, cost more than a definite sin one. It has to cost more money. So the commentary explains why. So it says, a guy knows I sinned, then you do tshuva. If a guy's in doubt, well, listen, why should I do tshuva? Maybe 50% that I didn't sin. You know, it's 50-50. So the level of tshuva is not as serious as when you know for sure you did something wrong. So the Torah says, we're going to hit you in the pocketbook. It's going to cost more money. You're going to do tshuva. So in other words, Eliyahu Navi is telling the Jewish people to be Peseach Hashtei HaSeifim. To be in the middle, neither here nor there, is worse than going to worship idols. And this was unique evil of Amalek. What did Amalek do? They come and make a suffix. Korcha baderech, they make you cold. Meaning, they don't say, don't do it. Maybe, maybe not, maybe, you know.
Is it because it shows that someone goes more with his interest than his faith? Because, like, sometimes doubt is good because you say to yourself, well, it's a guilt. can bring you to maybe discover God and maybe make tshuva.
But maybe not.
Maybe not, but maybe yes. But here, maybe they want to say more like you're following an interest. If suddenly there is an appearance, that God appears, so everybody's going to go to that camp because they're going to follow more interest. Seems to me more
There's a famous story. There was a big chassid in the previous generation called Rabbi Itcha the Masmit. He was mamish, a very lofty Jew. He was the chassid, but he was a very, very great Jew. And he once was sitting at a Fabrengen with the Rebbe Rashab, and the Rebbe Rashab was talking about this evil of Amalek. That what's the uniqueness of Amalek? He knows God and rebels against him. So he turns to the Rebbe Rashab, who cut him off mid-sentence, but the Rebbe Rashab understood what he wanted to say. He basically wanted to say that who today knows God and rebels against him is a Chabadnik. Wow. Why? Because they learn Chassidus, they learn all about God. If you don't learn Chassidus, you don't know God. So you know, it's not so bad, so to speak, when you sin because you don't know God. But to learn Chassidus and to learn all about God and then to go rebel, that's the clip of Amalek. But the Rebbe Rashab cut him off mid-sentence. He didn't let him finish the statement.
So is it safe to say when you want to do something, if you have doubts, the answer is no?
It depends what the doubts are.
Because if you don't have doubts...
There's a very simple way. The Yetzer Hara is very smart. Right?
Right.
It's a brilliant Yetzer. We all know. A Yetzer Hara is as smart as we are. Every person's Yetzer Hara is as smart as the person himself. Like we do. That one I don't know. Now, the Yetzer Hara comes and casts doubts to the person. Maybe you should do this. Maybe you should go to sleep because, you know, then you'll be able to learn better and whatever it is. How does a person know which direction the doubt is right or wrong? So the very simple answer. Bottom line. If you go this way, are you going to do more mitzvahs or less mitzvahs? In other words, maybe I shouldn't learn. Maybe I should go to sleep because then I'll be able to learn, you know, more later. Let's say, right? Bottom line, you're going to go to sleep or you're going to go learn? That's how you figure out what the doubt is, where the doubt is coming from. What's the bottom line from the two sides of it? Bottom line, don't look at the philosophical thing. Bottom line, you're going to give tzedakah or you're not going to give tzedakah? Maybe I shouldn't give tzedakah today because then I can make more money and then I'll be able to give more tzedakah. Maybe I should do it that way, right? Bottom line, now you're going to give tzedakah or not? That's how you look at the doubts. So this is the way you conquer Amalek, the doubts of Amalek, by looking at the bottom line. Forget the philosophy. The Amalek comes with a philosophy. You know, maybe don't give money now, because if you take the money instead of giving it to Tzedakah and you invest it, you might make so much more money, and then, oh, you'll be able to give a ton more Tzedakah. Yeah? So don't give now. So it's a good doubt. What should I do? Maybe it's right, you know, it's logical. The answer is bottom line. You're going to give tzedakah now or not? You're not, it can't be good. It can't be good. Okay.